I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. You've probably noticed that if you Google a topic or product, before long, advertisements promoting that product or related to that topic appear in your email or on your internet browser. That's happening because of something called data mining, which advertisers use to target you and me. In the early days of the internet, the consumer was king and largely in control of their actions and identities online. Today, it's a very different story. Our guest, Joseph Thoreau, joins us to reveal the many ways that media agencies create and customize consumer profiles and influence transactions online and on other digital media. His book is called The Daily You: How the New Advertising Industry is Defining Your Identity and Your Worth. He's a professor of communication at the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg School, where his work focuses on the intersection of the media, marketing, and society. And Joseph Thoreau, it's been a long time. Nice to have you back
Thank you, Marty. Nice to be back.
Appreciate it. Nice to have you back. Not so long ago, of course, the internet was this shiny, you know, new thing where we were going to see democracy and we could be anonymous and we could be you know, who we are online.
Or not.
Or not.
You know, if nobody knew you were supposedly a dog, if you were remember that cartoon, that New Yorker cartoon?
I do.
Now they know exactly what kind of dog you are.
Well, I'm wondering about that promise of the internet. Did that come true to some degree?
Well, the internet has done amazing things with our society. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that this is all a problem. We are much benefited because of the internet and many digital media. What I'm trying to do in the book and in the work that I do is to try to look at some of the dystopic parts that marketers and others don't talk about. And I think as citizens, we have to worry about some of the things that are happening because we have to think about where our society, where our kids and our grandkids are going to be in the next 100 years. And if we don't understand what's taking place under the hood of these new media, as a society, we're in trouble.
And I do want to pick up on that, but just a note, the title of your book, The Daily You, is a kind of a riff on a book that came out in the early 1990s by Nicholas Negroponte.
Yes.
His book was the Daily Me, the idea.
Well, he talked about The Daily Me. It was about digital being, and what he wanted to say is that we will all be creating our own newspapers, our own daily understandings of the world. And that is happening. But what I'm also saying, and that what Negroponte didn't talk about in being digital, is that advertisers and others are trying to create our own, our sense of ourselves for us. And that this is happening at a rapid pace and changing the way we relate to our reality.
You quote something that Barry Diller, QVC's Barry Diller, said back in, this is about, you know, almost ancient history, 1993 in Ad Week, where he seems to be have discovered what the internet is and the possibilities of the internet. What did he say?
Yeah. Well, back then, everybody was talking about the idea that this new medium is going to be a new engine of marketing. Essentially, a man named Michael Schrage wrote a piece in Ad Week in which he talked about how advertisers have to colonize this new internet, this new thing called the internet. And he was saying, in fact, that Diller and others are doing stuff on television, but that's just the beginning because television can be the internet can be television. And so from the mid-90s, advertisers began to realize that this was something they had to grapple with. It wasn't simple, and it's taken 20 years to even begin to ramp up. We're only the beginning of a new era. This is by no means the end or even the middle. This is like the beginning of baby steps. If you look at the old maps of the primordial human beings and how things work through, we're at year two.
Our knuckles are still dragging
barely,
on the ground.
Right, exactly. And so and things are incrementally and sometimes very quickly moving, but we're very early on in how this stuff is working. And that's why it's important to begin to understand it now.
Well, let's look under that hood, as you say. What is data mining? How does that work?
Data mining is the idea of trying to figure out how and what people do, what their backgrounds are, what their activities are, what their relationships are, to try to make sense of that and to use those data for the purpose that the marketer or the organization wants, whether it's political, whether it's selling products, whether it's giving news and entertainment. And so it's not simply a matter of getting the right ad, which is what we associate with now, getting a relevant ad. But down the line, we're going to see news created for us. We're going to see entertainment. The technologies exist to create different parts of shows for different households. And then the question becomes, why are we being treated in certain ways and other people being treated in other ways? Why am I getting this discount coupon and someone else not? And it really relates not just to privacy, as the discourse usually is, but discrimination.
Mm.
How do we think about a society in which we are being singled out or put into silos of reputations based upon ideas that we don't even know people have about us? And we certainly even haven't given them permission to use the data.
Well, and even picking up on that and looking at how the profiles that are created of consumers, there are the targets and the wastes.
Right.
What does that mean?
These are common words that increasingly are used in the advertising industry. A target means somebody you care about. Waste means a person who, if you reach them, it's a waste of money. And so increasingly the issue is if we can target people on the internet, or down the line that's going to be television, we can talk about that as well, it's not useful to reach someone who's probably doesn't have the money to buy your product or wouldn't be interested in it, at least according to your calculations, mm-hmm. the data mining we talked about. And so that's waste. So forget about the waste. Don't go after them or go after them for another purpose and just go over to the targets. And over time, this kind of approach really marginalizes certain people. Some people benefit from it. Some people are going to be the targets. You can get the best ads. You can get the best discounts. Other people might get things like if they know you eat a lot, you'll get fast food ads. And maybe a particular approach to exercise gyms that imply we know you're fat, and so a certain view of reality that other people wouldn't get. Maybe they send you used car ads because they think that you have a certain amount of money, and that's different from other people who can see other kinds of ads.
Do you see this? Is this the discrimination that you're talking about, that decisions have been made about who you are based on how you live in the internet?
Yes.
And then decisions have been made about that.
Yes, and it's not just the accuracy issue I'm concerned about, because a lot of times it's inaccurate, but it's also the question of, even if it is accurate, who has the right to surround us with views of the world that we don't know that we're being counted that way? There are lots of ways to define me. Who gets to control how I define myself? It's almost a philosophical question.
But how do they figure this out? And let's say I'm texting with friends and I'm talking about shoes,
mm-hmm.
which has happened, the Sudan,
okay,
hammocks,
mm-hmm.
and highway congestion.
All right.
So taking those four things, who mm-hmm. am I?
Yes, well, that's a very good question. I don't think that at this point, there are companies that look at what you say, and there are companies that call listening platforms. Some of it may be directly related to you and associated with cookie or maybe your name. More likely today, we're talking about demographics, meaning your age, your income, where you live, zip code, lifestyle characteristics, whether you look like you're a person who has diabetes, whether you look like you're a person who's fit, whether you look heavy, where you are in terms of your baby life cycle. Okay, those are lifestyle issues and personality and political proclivities even, based upon even the kind of restaurants you go to. What they do is they take data they have from other places and they say, well, this looks like a Republican. And then they try to find people who fit those characteristics, even if it has nothing to do with your voting mm-hmm. record, the cars you drive, the restaurants you go to, that kind of thing.
Now, this is naive here probably, but how do they know what restaurant I'm going to?
It may have to do with either the restaurant giving you a coupon so they can associate it with a cookie, or it could be that you belong to a club relating to the restaurant. A lot of times the sort of pieces that we leave, the little cookies, crumbles that we leave around the web, we don't even know we're doing it. And as a consequence, for example, you may think that because of rules like HIPAA, which protect our health, going to a website which is around health, they're not going to give out that information. It's illegal. But if you see an ad on that page that says, learn more about diabetes, and you click that, everything is open.
Hmm.
And if you leave your name there because they can send you free information, all of a sudden that is data they can use.
And who are the they? Who's this they?
There are data marketing companies and data management companies and data retrieval companies. There's a whole what's called an ecosystem of data companies that relate to web companies and publishers and ad networks, which are called. A very complex and developed and developing world. That so, for example, if I want to know, if I want to buy 50,000 women, for example, who are looking for sports cars now, there are ways to bid on them and reach them anywhere on the internet, wherever they're going, at the moment they're going into a website. In nanoseconds, decisions can be made that you can reach these people. So it's not even any particular publisher online. It's not even any particular site. It's the sort of merchandising or trafficking in individuals as they're going to different places. And we could talk about this not just in terms of us, but what effect is that having on publishers? If no longer the publisher is the unit of importance, what's happening is a lot of publishers are losing huge amounts of money, and newspapers are having terrible problems, particularly newspapers, magazines as well, because they're competing in this incredibly competitive environment where other groups are making the money too.
Let me pick up on a couple of things that you said there, and in fact, some of the things that you write about in your book, which is that it isn't psychologists or maybe even anthropologists who are looking at us and making these decisions. These are statisticians, probability theorists, people that have even migrated from Wall Street into marketing.
Yes, the new sort of sexy person in
quotation marks,
in the marketing world is the mathematician, the probability person, somebody who understands statistics and computer studies, computer science. It is also what's very interesting too is I would argue, and I think people who are in copywriting and art direction would argue with this, but I think most people would agree that media buying and planning, which used to be some kind of backwater in the industry, the simple decision of where an ad should go, is becoming the core of what advertising and marketing is about. And no one would have predicted that 30 years ago. So today it's so complicated. And I've had people, when I interviewed people for the book, who said to me, I don't even tell my boss how this really works. He doesn't care as long as it works. You know, this is hard stuff to understand.
And we're almost up on a break here. Is there a short definition of a cookie?
Yes. A cookie is a text file that is placed in your browser, with the idea of identifying you the next time that company comes, next time you go to a website that relates to that company.
And do people know about these
cookies? Most people have no idea exactly what a cookie is. They understand, they know the word cookie, but they really have no notion of what it is. And there are a lot of misconceptions, which the advertising industry encourages, about cookies. People may think that if you get rid of cookies, you don't have to worry about being tracked. That's not the case.
Well, let's take a short break, and I do want to pick up on that. And we are talking not just about cookies. We're talking with Joseph Turow about the internet. He's got a new book called The Daily You, and it's subtitled How the New Advertising Industry is Defining Your Identity and Your Worth. We've covered a lot of territory. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-9499. WHYY. Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Grounds for Sculpture supports WHYY, the 42-acre sculpture park located in the heart of central New Jersey just minutes from Route 295, presents the Nine Yi Chen Dance Company performance of Year of the Dragon in its only central New Jersey appearance, Sunday, January 15th, part of Winter Wonders and a host of Chinese New Year events. Grounds for Sculpture offers family programs this winter and all season long, open daily Tuesday through Sunday. Directions and calendar of events online at groundsforsculpture.org. Nine Yi Chen Dance Company, and more at Grounds for Sculpture.
As far as most of us are concerned, this is the voice of the civil rights movement.
I have a dream.
But you may have never heard of Dr. King's dream if it weren't for another man.
The problem can never be stated in terms of black and white.
Hear the words and wisdom of an unsung hero of the civil rights movement on State of the Reunion.
Monday at noon on WHYY.
I'm Jesse Thorne. For a while, this guy Chris Gethard hosted a regular show at a little theater in New York.
And then he put a video on YouTube addressed to P. Diddy.
Because I want to live in a world where I can make a video like this, and you'll somehow see it. And if you actually see it, maybe you'll come by.
And guess what? P. Diddy saw it and stopped by. This week on Bullseye from PRI.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We've been talking about the internet. Certainly the promise of the internet was to give individuals control over news and information, over their profile, their identity. Instead, it's the advertisers who are largely deciding about the news, information, and products we receive online, and they do this through data mining. And that's what our guest, Joseph Turow, writes about in his new book, The Daily You. He's a professor of communication at the Annenberg School at the University of Pennsylvania. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We were talking about cookies, and you're saying that people believing they can get rid of these cookies that are essentially tracking what we're doing, you're saying not so
and
bad.
It's not that simple. Sometimes you can. You get rid of the cookies, and a company might have difficulty remembering who you are when you come back. But right the second you come back, they will repopulate. But in a lot of cases, companies can figure out who you are despite that. One way is something called a flash cookie, which it puts the cookie, the traditional cookie, essentially data in another part of your browser. So that when you erase your cookies, that thing is still there. If you know about it, you can erase that, but it's hard to find it. Then there are companies that are trying to say, hey, we don't, cookies have been great, but they're kind of outmoded because people are trying to get rid of them. And there are new ways to track people based upon what's called device fingerprinting. What they do is they find out about your device and give it a kind of code number. And so when the device comes back, they know who you are rather than any kind of cookie in your browser. The thing about cookies, of course, is that it's browser related. So if you use, and this is important to know, if you use one browser for one purpose and another browser for another purpose, you're two different identities. So you can do that and sort of keep your sort of porno identity on one browser and your other identity on another browser if one wants to do that.
And I do want to pick up actually up on pornography only because we know how popular it is online. And how does that complicate, I guess, what these data aggregators are doing or miners are doing?
Essentially, I have actually, frankly, never seen a profile of people based on their pornography use. I really haven't. I don't know.
But you think that would be interesting to somebody?
It would be. And I suspect that somewhere out there, someone is trying to make sense of those data. It is perfectly possible because what it is, it's not just using pornography. It's a question of what, if a person uses it, what does that predict about that person's life? And all
their
of
preferences,
this, exactly. All of this is about what. How do we predict what a person is going to do? And the more data points we have about a person, the more that allows to predict everything from the soap you're going to buy to the person you might vote for.
And when you say data, are we talking about, you know, a list of products and affiliations? Are we talking about X's and O's? Are we talking about a string of numbers?
All of the above.
All of the above.
In other words, data starts with a person's particular activities in the world and a person's background. And those data can be used, as I said, it could be demographic. It could be things like what kind of auto type do you buy? Here's disease propensity, lifestyle segments. This is a quote from are you in market for certain travel, auto, local services, education, consumer products? And so in market is a big thing among a lot of companies. And so what they will do is there's a trafficking about data, and there are companies that actually take offline data about us, merge them with online data about us, sometimes take away the name so that it's scrubbed of direct identifiability, but they're connected to cookies. And so you have more and more data about a person. Now, as I said, nowadays, it's essentially for ads and discounts and things of that sort. Increasingly, it's going to be if we have different news stories for Joe Turow compared to Marty Moscoen because they have different profiles, will they buy the products on the page better? So we may see a whole different news and entertainment environment based around the different profiles that people have. And the profiles, because of the cookie changes I suggested, are becoming more persistent. They don't just disappear like they used to.
Do ads, though, work online? And the way they work in the or maybe don't work in the analog world? Sort of programmed at this point, I think, to have a kind of distaste for advertising, generally speaking.
There are two types, broadly speaking, of ads on the online world. One is called direct response advertising in the broadest sense, and the other is display advertising. Direct response advertising is the kind of stuff we see on Google, where Google sells our presence based on our click. If you click on the paid search, the stuff on the side, Google will get money. And we could talk about how that works, and there's an auction system based on data about you. The display stuff is like magazine ads. They're sold on what's called a cost per thousand impressions basis. And in each case, it's really questionable as to whether it works in the traditional advertising sense. The percentage of clicks on Google even is less than 1%. They're low. In any new medium, like mobile in the beginning, you find that people clicked high, so 10%. But really, once the medium settles down and people realize this is no nirvana of advertising, they get smart, they don't click.
Right.
Google makes its money because there are billions of impressions. And as a result of those billions, even if it's 0.5%, there's still 0.5% clicks on billions of times is a lot of money. Newspapers can't afford that. And so what happens is in newspapers, they go on a cost per thousand basis. You buy an ad. And whether or not a person clicks on the ad, you get paid. And the same problems, of course, that exist in advertising in general exist in newspapers. Is this going to be a beautiful picture of a car? Does that mean somebody's going to buy a Buick? You know? So all of those same issues exist. The only thing they'll tell you is we can target better. And if we know a lot more about people, maybe we'll know who to send the Buick ad versus the Lexus ad versus the Chevy ad. So there's a matter of hope for the advertiser more than anything else.
Is there any way to find out what one's profile is online?
Yes. There are certain places that you can go to, particularly for ad networks. If people go to sometimes if you go to an ad and you'll see a little icon at the bottom of the ad, which is an advertising awareness icon, so that says you can go and not get them to not send you relevant ads. Doesn't mean they'll stop tracking you. They won't send you relevant ads. But if you go in there and search around, you'll find that some of the companies that are relating to that will tell you some stuff about what they know about you. So we know you're in market for cultural stuff. You like symphonies and things like that. I had my students do this on a test basis, and they came back with about half the time they said, yeah, that's me, and half the time they said, that's ridiculous.
Oh, that's not me.
So the
reliability is...
Yeah, it's very iffy, and companies know this. They just have to work with what they have. And again, it's not to me, the issue is not necessarily accuracy. The issue is, where do they get this information? Do we have any control over it? And most of the times we have no idea that it's working in the background. And what should the relationship be between us and our data? Who owns our data? Who owns us and our opinion of us?
Well, that's a privacy question in part, is it not?
In the largest sense, yes. But it also is, a societal discrimination question. If certain people get treated differently, if you get different entertainment than the person next door or different agendas of entertainment – because somehow you're being treated differently. Why? And who decided that? I've had people tell me when we talk about this, members of the public, they'll say, well, I'll change my habits so I'll get treated better.
Huh.
So that's a whole other
thing. Online habits,
yes.
I guess.
Yes, and even now, we shouldn't separate online from offline because your drugstore does both, and everywhere we go, the droppings of the offline world are connected more and more to the online world. Mm-hmm. The stores have handshakes with their – they should anyway from a marketing standpoint – have handshakes with their online websites. I give this example for people who think that 20-cent discounts are not a big deal. A lot of people think they are a big deal. But, people who don't, it's possible. And I don't know if this really is the case. When you buy an airline ticket and you go to the airline website and you see a map and they'll say choose your seat, sometimes some seats will cost more than other seats. Mm-hmm. It is perfectly possible, and I would bet they do this, so I don't have any proof, to show different maps to you and to me based upon our previous habits on the airline and figure out what you would pay for so that they only show you seats that don't exist so that you'll pay for the ones that you really want. So they're changing the shape of the airplane for me and for you based upon extrapolations of what we would pay for.
Hmm.
See,
are you saying you think this is going on based on what you know
about?
I would
suspect it's going on, but I have no proof. Several years ago, we did a national survey on price discrimination, and it was very difficult at the time to give examples of that. And reporters said to me, you know, Americans don't like it. Most Americans think that price discrimination is illegal. It's not.
Hmm.
But later on, Wall Street Journal did a report that showed it's rampant. You know, how we're treated price-wise is increasingly very different based upon what companies know about us.
Let me reintroduce you. I do want to give out that phone number again. Joseph Theroux is our guest today on Radio Times, and he's the author of a new book. It's called The Daily You, How the New Advertising Industry is Defining Your Identity and Your Worth. Again, he's a professor of communication at the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg School, and his work focuses on this intersection between media marketing and society. We have, again, covered a lot of territory. We'd be interested in your questions and your comments at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Are you a target or a waste?
Mm.
Let me see what Michael from South Jersey has to say. Michael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have Michael? Yes? No? Should we try Dan from Jenkintown? And Dan, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes. Hi, Marty.
Hi.
There's increasing concern about the emergence of a national security state, essentially, and the kind of information that the government may or may not be collecting on us. And I'd like your guest to speak to, are there any firewalls between what marketers and advertisers are collecting on us and what the government is entitled to collect in terms of aggregating data and drawing profiles and then possibly taking actions against individuals based on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's an interesting question. I don't study the national security aspect of this, I have to say right up front. But I do know that there are certain things the government cannot collect about us, but that when certain agencies like the FBI need data, they will go and buy the data from the data companies like Experian and Acxiom that exist out there. So in some ways, the commercial businesses are part of this larger data provision activity.
What's the role, just picking up on Dan's call, what's the role of the Federal Trade Commission? Part of their mm-hmm. job is to oversee some of this stuff.
Yes.
And to police it.
The FTC is in a difficult situation. I know a lot of the people there, and they are very interested in these issues. They care about it. They also they don't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. I mean, more and more they feel that American society is data-driven. So much manufacturing has gone overseas. If you look at the companies that are doing really well, like the Googles, they're based on data. So to give you a short example, we've done a number of research studies which show that, generally speaking, if you give Americans a sentence and you say, true or false, when a website has a privacy policy, it means that the site won't share your information with any other companies without your permission. The answer to that is it's false. Okay, they can do any. The website privacy policy, as many of them have, like Yahoo, read the privacy policy. It'll say we take your data, we do anything we want with it. So as long as they're accurate about it, they're fine.
And now, no one reads that stuff.
Nobody
anyway.
Reads it. Even lawyers would prefer not to read it. So we find that. And we've done this four times, 58-62% of Americans say it's true, meaning they're wrong, and then 15% or so say they don't know. So 75% of Americans get it wrong. So we go to the FTC and we say, look, 75% of Americans across a number of years of surveys, real good national surveys, have said that they misunderstand what the word privacy policy. If a privacy policy doesn't fit what Americans think it is, tell companies not to call it a privacy policy. Mm-hmm. Maybe call it use how we use your information or something. The people nod at the FTC. They feel for what we found, and yet nothing changes. Because there are so many cross currents, the administration, the concern about business. So it is a very, very complicated story. And we're now in a situation where the FTC is trying to think through this whole question of should companies make us opt into data or not? Should certain kinds of provisions be made to protect people in other ways? And it's a tough situation.
Well, you even have suggestions at the end of your book to let people know what's going on with their data. Mm-hmm. That seems pretty self-evident. Create a do-not-track regime with rotating relevance categories.
Yeah, that's a tough one,
though. Pass ground-level government regulations to force a playing field of good actors.
That's another thing. I mean, there are people in the ad business, and I've spoken to many of them. I've given talks at conferences, and I talk to people in other places, and they care a lot about this stuff. Right. But it's very difficult because it's also a big business, and they're caught. So I don't know what's going to happen. I do think that we can't hide from these issues, and that we have to realize our kids have to know this stuff. They have to understand. Now, what you can do once you know it is a different story. It's not easy. Just because you know it doesn't mean you know exactly what's happening and what to do about it. But the more people know, the more they can intelligently critique. And then maybe the FTC and various other groups will respond.
Let me get, looks like Sarah from Wisconsin to join us on Radio Times.
Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, Sarah, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
I was just going to make a comment on the psychological effect of the data mining that you're discussing, because I had a hysterectomy a few years ago, and for medical reasons, psychologically we were done having children, but it was about that time that I had the surgery that I started getting all kinds of mail about, brochures in the mail sent from all the various birthing suites and hospitals in the area of the luxury and, have your baby here at our hospital. And,
oh, wow.
Local retailers sending me coupons for new cribs and baby items. And I even got coupons in the mail for haircuts from a new baby. I had baby formula mailed to me, like actual cans of formula. And it was when I went to redeem a coupon at a local retailer, I actually bought a vacuum with it. And I told him how ironic it was that I got this coupon. And, he was a good manager, and he actually found that I was, got on the list from a website.
Yes.
But had I psychologically not been prepared for that or been in a different place where I needed to have the hysterectomy, maybe I wanted to have oodles more children, that would have been really hard to have constantly gone to the mailbox and been getting these reminders about children.
Go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah, no, that's very sad. And I wonder what would have happened if someone had also gone after you based upon your operation. In other words, if companies had picked up on the hysterectomy and then began to, aside from what the other part of you in life cycle, have started sending you data about that and advertisements in that area, it can freak people out. It's a problematical thing.
And a very disturbing story, Sarah. Yeah. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. And as you said, we're almost up in a break here, Joseph, but as you said, oftentimes these data miners get it wrong, and clearly in this case, in Sarah's case, they
didn't
got
connect
it terribly
dots.
Wrong.
And, yeah, they knew about her age and they knew about her life cycle, but they didn't know other things, and it's inappropriate.
Indeed. Yeah. Sarah, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We're talking about data mining and online tracking with our guest, Joe Tureau, author of a new book called The Daily You. Much more to talk about after this short break. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Westown School supports WHYY. Since 1799, Westown has invited students pre-K through grade 12 to pursue a life-size education, one that helps to prepare each student for what comes next, not only for college and career, but for a whole life. You can learn more by attending Westown's open house on Saturday, January 14th at 10 a.m. Details at westown.edu. Westown School, a life-size education.
The FX series Justified begins its third season next week. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Timothy Oliphant, who plays U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens. And he'll tell us about his work on other shows, including Deadwood, The Office, and Damages. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. An Egyptian woman running for parliament finds inspiration in Martin Luther King. Also, football anyone? It's down to 8 teams in the NFL playoffs. We'll get a preview. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with Joe Turow about the many ways that media agencies are creating and customizing consumer profiles, influencing many of the transactions we have online and on other digital media. His book is called The Daily You, How the New Advertising Industry is Defining Your Identity and Your Worth. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me see what Denise from Chinatown has to say. Denise, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was just listening about all the target marketing and things, and it seems to me that they would be creating an awful lot of homogenized people that are not really open-minded or willing to try new things, because all we're getting shoved at us is the same thing over and over again.
It's kind
of like Stepford Wives.
I wouldn't go that far, and I don't want to totalize it, but at the same time, I think that one of the points I try to make is that we increasingly are being placed into these silos. And as I say, it's not now, but if we extrapolate what I talk about 20 years from now, the data and the ways of doing this are going to be far more detailed. So yes, you may get a view of the world that is repetitive and related to what companies think about you. It can change. It's not totally a Stepford Wives thing, but it will be based upon ideas about you that you don't know where they're coming from. And actually, it will be television. I mean, television I have no doubt, in 5 to 10, certainly 10 years, will be the internet. There are companies now that have the ability to change the commercial on the fly based upon what they know about your household. So they can actually even change the layer of the commercial. So for me, they may have a middle-aged man in the car with a different car. For you in Chinatown, it may be a young woman with a sports car in the commercial. And you could even do this in a show. It's quite expensive at this point. But, you know, prices and data speeds are going down. The speeds are going up. The price is going down. And I have no question that you can actually create a different news show for me and you and a third person based upon what you think will respond to best.
Denise, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Because is it also true that if I do Google News, the news that at the top of the page might be different for me than it would be for you? Is that true?
Yes, it's true. You can, of course, Google News allows you to set it up. But increasingly, depending on, for example, most obvious thing, where you are. I went abroad. So I went to Google News abroad. It knew where I was, switched the news based on that. And when I came back to the U.S., they still thought I was in a different country. So I was seeing all these things in a different country. And now there's a whole new thing called Google Social that's related to Google Plus. And your results, unless you turn it off, are specifically keyed not just to what they know about you, but also to who your friends are, what your friends are saying. So while it used to be the case that everybody got the same Google, now the Google results that you see are very much specified to who you are and what the world they see you in.
What are the political ramifications of this? We are in the beginning of what will be a very hotly contested presidential election year. How do you see this playing out politically?
We're going to see increasingly, and this may be a year in which this really begins to explode, the kinds of things I've been talking about in the consumer marketing area are increasingly being brought over into politics. It's taken a while because political advertising is relatively conservative, meaning they don't want to try a whole lot of new things that they're not sure about because they only have a few months to try. If it doesn't work, you're in a lot of trouble. But there are companies now that are pitching to politicians to go after the targets and get rid of the waste in the way we've been talking about. And so, for example, here's one company that says, I have a quote, we gauge party affiliation and intensity of activity via in-banner studies. We leverage data from social media profiles and other third-party sources. We scale audiences using look-alike algorithms. We identify behaviors and interests of those in the mobilization audience and intelligently expand the reach people originally unconsidered who look, act, and respond in similar ways.
Can you translate that for us? I think I know what they're saying.
What they're saying is we look at what people are doing online and we decide whether they're relevant to this candidate.
Whether they're Republican or Democrat.
Or whether they're likely in this area to vote for you, given their preferences, given what they say online, given their background. And then those are the people we send ads to in a certain kind. So different people who might vote for you might be persuaded by different kinds of ads. And based upon what we know about them, you will get – this is called micro-targeting. You will get different ads from me, even from the same candidate, and some people will be just not considered at all because they're not worth it.
So you could have someone that drives a Ford and someone that drives a Toyota, and someone is – I mean, obviously, you need, the more data you have, I guess, the better predictive it is, mm-hmm. but you, judgments are being made about what we drive.
Judgments are being made about cars, about living situations, about a whole lot of things, and then attached to party affiliations, predicted mm-hmm. party affiliations, and even predicted views of life and politics. And then ads are sent to these people based upon that. And we're going to see more and more of that.
And would you say that's probably not new, but the idea that the internet gives these aggregators or whatever, miners, so much information mm-hmm. that they didn't have in the more analog world.
Yes.
Where it was more sort of interpersonal.
And it was right. It was handshaking. And this one person I was reading says the handshake doesn't get it anyway. Kissing a baby isn't the point. You have to micro-target and find out a lot of this stuff. And it's been growing, but I suspect that this coming election, the presidential one, we'll see more and more of that kind of thing.
Let me get, looks like Greg from Pittstown, New Jersey, to join our conversation. And Greg, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to ask your guest about anti-tracking software. Mm-hmm. I read last week that soon we'll all have anti-tracking software on our computers like we have antivirus software. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if there is any anti-tracking software that's any good.
Well, there are software anonymizers, it's called. You can go online even now and get these things, and there's a number of them. Frankly, I don't use them because I want to see what happens to me when I go online. Very few people actually use them. Now, what we have here is a cat and mouse game. So people will begin to use these things, and as I said, companies then find out other ways, non-software related ways, that relate to your device rather than things like the cookies, to figure out where you are. Beyond that, I think we will get to a point where companies will say, you have to tell us who you are if we are going to deal with you and you're going to get a benefit from us. In other words, they are going to affirmatively say, you want to fool around with anti-tracking? Go ahead and do it. You're not going to do business with us. So, for example, there are Facebook sites now where there are fan pages. And the fan pages will say, come to us and we will let you get in on a sweepstake, or we'll give you a certain amount of money to come to our fan page, meaning a discount. But they say the only way we'll do this is if you like us. Okay? And, of course, once you like them, you are sending all your friends the knowledge that you're liking this company, and then they can send what's called sponsored story ads and stuff like that. So essentially the companies are saying, if you want to play ball with us, you have to do something for us.
And play ball meaning get our discounts, get all the goodies.
So my sense is that down the line, companies are going to say, enough of this. We don't want to play this cat and mouse game. If we can't figure out who you are, we're just not going to deal with you. And if you want stuff from us, you have to play the game.
And I can imagine perhaps Greg and other consumers saying, fine, you know, you don't need me. We'll part ways.
Well, but the thing is that most people don't say that. And people who I speak to in the advertising industry critique what I do by saying, look, we give people 50 cents off and they tell us their whole lives, you know, and look at what happens on Facebook. And we've done research on this and with young people too. And what we find is in the privacy of people's activities, meaning if you give them an interview and you ask them about privacy, they all care about it.
Right.
When they go on Facebook, particularly 18 to 24-year-olds, young people, they'll do crazy things. Well, a lot of times it's because they just don't think, you know, and maybe older people do similar things. Maybe they don't take their clothes off on Facebook, but they do give out other kinds of information. In the heat of social activity And because people really want to be social and they want to learn things, they want to just go on and learn something, they'll give it out, they'll take the money back. They don't think of the implications. And part of it, they don't really understand data mining. Hmm. They understand that I gave out this and I gave out that, but they don't understand the complexity of how this stuff gets put together. And so it's very complicated. So the people I know in the ad industry will say, you know, you say people are worried about it, but they give up their firstborn when they went for 50 cents.
Probably because they haven't quite connected it. And then I think also the convenience of all this media is just so seductive.
It's hard not. When I go online, I want to do something.
Of course.
And if I can't do it, it's a problem.
Now, people not just using their dogs as our identity, but is it still possible to be anonymous online?
Yes, with these anonymizers, you can do that. As I say, very few people do it. You can do it, and you can also use your browsers differently.
Let me get looks like Kathy from Wayne to join our conversation. And Kathy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
As an adult, I feel bullied about having an online presence. I've been concerned about privacy and have not had a Facebook page or a LinkedIn page, but when looking for work, there's a lot of pressure from both potential employers and headhunters who say, well,
yes,
I can't find you on LinkedIn or Facebook, and you really should be on there if you really want to get work.
Yes.
So I feel as adults in society, we're bullied to get online and become vulnerable to having our data mined.
Well, I think this is a really good point. That's sort of what I've been saying about, you know, there are certain social expectations, certain increasingly marketing expectations of what it means to do this. What I would suggest is just do what your LinkedIn and Facebook, that's what I do, is I have these things and I have a Twitter account, but only put things on there that you would want an employer to know. I told my kids this too, and thankfully they've assimilated it. Don't put anything online that you think in 2 or 3 years you're going to be embarrassed about. The real problem, even for teenagers who care about this stuff, is that their friends may put things on.
Right.
And this is a big issue in schools. I even was talking to a friend of mine who lives in Connecticut who said that in his school, they actually, some parents hire people to clean their kids' Facebook pages. You know, it's apparently a business. But even so, you can never tell if someone's going to start sending, you know, photos of you. Of course, in gyms now, they have a thing where you're not allowed to use a cell phone to take pictures of people inside locker rooms. And these are issues. But if the best advice I can give, which is, I guess, common sense, is put together a page that is a CV that you wouldn't care that anybody looked at.
Kind of a generic page, just so that you have a presence.
And it looks good.
And it looks good. Kathy, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let's try Jack from Ambler. And Jack, go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Jack? Nope, we don't seem to have Jack. And we are talking with Joseph Durow today on Radio Times about the internet and about the ways that data mining companies are creating and customizing consumer profiles, influencing transactions online. As you said, you don't have things, you don't have, you want to be online because you want to see how it works.
Right.
And I guess how you show up online.
Yes, and
so what do they know about you?
Surprisingly, well, they seem to nothing that I would be terribly embarrassed about. You know, they have certain ideas about my age, and I've been getting like dating platforms have been sending me things based upon what they think my age is. You know, and other
What's the connection, do you think?
I don't know.
What do they think about you?
I don't know. It may have been one of my students is doing some research on dating sites. And so I've gone to a dating site to check things out. And so in recent weeks, I've been getting these ads for dating sites based upon my age. You know, they think so. They've combined two different data sets. And, you know, things like remarketing, which is a very big issue, which is if you're looking for example, a camera lens and you go to a camera store for the next 2 weeks, I'd be getting ads for various lenses, sometimes exactly the same lens. These are small issues, and they're not particularly disturbing in the abstract, but they are highlighting the kinds of things I'm talking about.
Let me get one more caller on. Rosie Anal? Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I'd like to know if your guest has ever looked into focus groups and all the information they get. They get this information for nothing with the promise of giving you a lot of money if you participate. But I've been participating online to see if I qualify. They offer a lot of money, like $150 or $250 for a 60-minute or a 70-minute interview in their office. They have an office on City Line Avenue. They have one.
I know the company.
Okay. Oh, have you looked into them? Because they know everything about me. And then at the end, they say, oh, you don't qualify. I've stopped answering those because I'm a little bit concerned about, they know my income, my religion.
You really raise a very interesting question. The number of people who are interviewed in focus groups, relatively speaking, is quite small. The question, so I doubt that they would necessarily sell the data about you. It would be interesting to know the contract, whether they have a right to do that. That is an issue. Focus groups are, however, used as online and offline as a way to try to relate ideas to demographics. One can really question from a research standpoint whether that's the right thing to do, but they do do that. Whether or not they take your specific data and then sell it is an interesting question. I tend to doubt it. But it's something if you ever do this again, ask to look at the contract that you're signing.
Yeah. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. The focus group seems so quaint.
Yes.
In today's
Now the focus group is there are what's called listening platform companies, and what these and this is a very big deal now, a whole mini industry. The company actually, for example, let's say you're Disney World. Nowadays, with everything going on online, you want to know to the moment what people are saying about you. Is anybody saying anything bad? Because virally, you can get destroyed. And so there are companies that continually audit this stuff. And there are also companies themselves, or they pay companies to act for them and talk to people online about the companies.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about and talk about. Joseph Giroux, thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And the book is called The Daily You, How the New Advertising Industry is Defining Your Identity and Your Worth. It's published by Yale University Press. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Artie Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.